SBS live streams and podcasts are supported by advertising.
You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
Coming up, a massive fibre infrastructure deal, more Chinese stimulus, and the Australian share market edges closer to a record. That's all next. Hi everyone, it's your daily 10-minute business and finance news wrap for this Monday, the 14th of October 2024. The Australian share market had a good start to the week, the ASX 200 up by 0.5%. I'll have the details with Nick Schoenmaker from Drummond Capital Partners soon. But first, to a massive infrastructure deal, a $5.25 billion deal building on a global trend where larger investment-focused groups with deep pockets, often backed by superannuation funds, are taking over infrastructure assets. Vocus Group, which is owned by Macquarie and Aware Super, is buying TPG's government and enterprise fixed and fibre assets, this at a time where data demand is huge, given the shift to AI. So with more details, I spoke earlier with Paul Butter, telecommunications analyst. Paul, how significant is this deal and why?
It is really significant because it shows the shift that's happening in the telecommunications industry, not only in Australia, but worldwide. We've been talking about this actually for decades, but you know, the vertical integrated structure of telecommunications companies is no longer valid. Yeah, it doesn't really work. You see that Telstra has already split its infrastructure division, and you see now that companies such as Macquarie are really investing in infrastructure because they have a long-term view. They have the money to invest in this massive investments in telecommunications. So the shift is very, very clearly to the companies that can invest in infrastructure. You know, we need that infrastructure. Look at what's happening in the data economy. Our economy depends on it. Our society depends on it. So infrastructure is critical, and Macquarie is investing in that through Vocus, yeah, because they own Vocus. So in that situation, it's a massive change. It will also have an effect, for example, what's going to happen with the NBN in the future. Yeah. So also that's infrastructure. Yeah. Will it be part of Macquarie or larger organizations? You know, that are really the important things that are becoming clearer and clearer now we see these sort of developments happening.
So Macquarie, along with the Aware Super, which owns Vocus, these specialized investment companies that are now putting more money into these digital assets, digital infrastructure assets, how important will it be for, I guess, big business in Australia? Like the companies saying it will provide greater competition, but at the same time, what does it mean for Australia as a whole nationally in terms of the way it does deals with Asia, for example?
I think there are a couple of elements to this, Ricardo. Of the, you know, on the first place, what you really start seeing is the absolute critical importance of infrastructure. You know, look at cybercrime, look at the geopolitical sort of issues. In that respect, Australia is also becoming very strategically very important. With the troubles in the Middle East, with the troubles in the South China Sea, yeah, Australia is becoming of interest internationally as a reliable hub in this whole network, in this whole conglomerate of infrastructure that's around the world. So I think that's important. That's, of course, is great for Australia because, you know, if you become a telecommunications hub, it also becomes important for international companies to be part of a large network, an international network with enormous capacity. It's good for banks. It's good for all sorts of other organizations that depend on the digital economy, that depends on very solid networks, international networks, and Australia is gaining that position more and more and more.
So with this digital infrastructure being owned by a specialized investment company, what can they do that someone like TPG, which owned it at the moment, can't do?
A couple of things. I think they've got very deep pockets, yeah? They have absolutely a strategy where they are aiming at investing in infrastructure. Yeah, you've seen that across the broad of infrastructure, where large superannuation companies are involved. It's interesting, Ricardo, that already a decade ago, we saw similar developments happening in Europe, yeah, where superannuation funds started to invest in the broadband networks, in the fiber optic networks. So, you know, this is not new. You know, this is something that's already for a long time. When the NBN started in Australia, you know, for example, people like myself argued that superannuation companies should become involved, but, you know, didn't happen at that time. Now you start seeing this development happening more and more and more. So it's really something that is critical to the future of the telecommunications companies, of investment companies who have the big pocket, and the long term, you know, they see the importance of it. It's such a solid investment because, you know, the world depends on digital infrastructure. So they don't have a lot of risk, yeah, and they've got the capacity to make that sort of investment. So that's in it for those companies.
So this sale by TPG is for about $5.25 billion. I think in terms of cash, TPG gets about 4.75. It says it'll use that money to focus on its consumer-facing services. It'll support some business investment initiatives. However, it said that those initiatives they'll provide some more detail about what happens next year once the deal goes through. So what do you think it means for TPG and customers? Because they're implying that it will mean greater competition, right?
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see if that happens, Ricardo. But yes, you know, what is happening is that the telcos are becoming more and more retail operators. So they are the marketing people. They are the people that make particular products, yeah, developing products, applications, and what have you, on top of the infrastructure. So rather that they have to pay attention, money, take risk, and have a lot of management focused on the infrastructure, instead of that, they can far more focus on the market, on their customers, on the products that they create. So I think if you look at, for example, a company as Telstra, yeah, you know, if you've got massive, massive assets and infrastructure, obviously your management is focused on that. Obviously, your strategies is focused on that. So if you take away that particular sort of worry and risk, yeah, and you can totally concentrate on the market and on marketing and on your customers, obviously that makes a difference. You know, the company becomes far more focused, yeah, on the retail side if they make that shift away from infrastructure to services.
That's Paul Buddha there. But what does it mean for consumers? I spoke earlier with Carol Bennett. She's the CEO of the Australian Communications Consumer Action Network.
Well, look, I think for consumers, this is not necessarily a front-facing deal. I mean, most consumers wouldn't know about Vocus because it deals primarily with the government and business sector. For the TPG customer, this shouldn't change very much at all. In fact, for most TPG customers, this should simply remain, if they've got a mobile plan, in TPG hands, so they won't notice any major differences from this deal. Ideally, down the track, we'll see some sort of cost benefit for consumers, but look, the impact of this in terms of the competition outcomes are still pretty much uncertain, and it remains to be seen.
And just finally, do we have any other precedent? I mean, I know Telstra, for example, over the past few years spun off its infrastructure business as well. Did competition benefit from that?
Yeah, look, generally speaking, you know, when there's more competition in the market, we do tend to see some benefits, particularly reduced costs for consumers. In this case, you know, it's more going to be on the business government side of things. However, one of the issues that we do have is that we want to see small business not negatively impacted by this deal. And by that, I mean, you know, we want to see the same service standards, contract standards, no increased costs. So it's on that small business side that we think there could potentially be some impacts. However, we do note that the ACCC will have to approve this deal. So we expect that will be in favour of consumers and in favour of small business. But as I said, all of this remains to be seen once the deal gets underway.
That is Carol Bennett there from the Australian Communications Consumer Action Network.
Now, Market Day on the SBS On The Money podcast.
A good start to the working week for the Australian share market with a 200 up 0.5%. With the details, I spoke with Nick Schoenmaker from Drummond Capital Partners.
Great to see you. Thank you for having me back. So the Aussie market's taken a strong lead from the US to push higher in the first session of the week. We're just shy of the record of about 8.267, I believe, that was set late in September. Banks are doing well. That's off the back of the Q3 earnings season in the US, which started. We saw some very decent results from JP Morgan, Wells Fargo, BlackRock as well, had strong performance. Gold miners have been doing well today. So Regis, Bellevue Gold, West African Resources, and mining stocks, which didn't really do much, they're unmoved for most of the day, have staged a late recovery. I think they're now leading the charge. And the iron ore price has rallied as well. So Fortescue, I think, is up about 4%. On the economic data front, I guess just supporting the market events today, we had the US producer prices index released on Friday, which had no change. So overall, that's helping support the expectation that inflation is continuing to trend towards the Fed target, that there'll be rate cuts again in November, probably December. And just overall, I guess the market is still very much supportive of the Goldilocks or soft landing, not too hot, not too cold economic conditions.
Let's break some of that down. You mentioned the miners. The miners did particularly well last week, along with the Chinese share market. That follows its recently announced stimulus measures. Over the weekend, there was a little bit more. Can you run us through that? Yeah. And if you think there's been enough stimulus in there to help the economy there push through to that 5% target that the government wants?
Yeah, so we saw Chinese equities go on a total tear, I guess, through September. Towards the end of the month, I think mining stocks, the mining sector was up probably 15% for the month. That was after what was, I guess, quite unexpected in terms of the stimulus measures coming out of China. It covered monetary, fiscal, also regulatory policies looking at direct market intervention. The size of the stimulus is probably bigger than COVID. I think it was one of the biggest ever in notional GDP terms. We also saw Chinese equities do very well and stage a remarkable weekly rally, I think of about 25% just before the Golden Week holiday. And then last week, we saw some softness. Chinese equities were down about 3% because there wasn't enough clarity on the fiscal side. And what you just alluded to, there was a meeting over the weekend. China's Ministry of Finance did reveal more increments of stimulus measures. Most notably, there was broad discussion around the elements of fiscal policy, but the sizes and the details were a little bit hazy. So that did disappoint the market. We did see oil prices and iron ore at the time drift a little bit lower. But overall, I think the ministry stance to us does really reinforce the messages that Beijing is going to deliver. So in terms of what some of the messages were over the weekend, the Ministry of Finance did state that there is a package under review by the Standing Committee of the National People's Congress and that Beijing is definitely keen to expand the remit of the fiscal deficit by issuing more government bonds in the future. And there is plans for a significant round of local government debt swaps for bond sales. And we know in China we've had massive issues with local government debt in addition to the doldrums of the property sector. So that's a very good development, and that standing committee meeting, I believe, is expected to take place on the 20th of October. So I think there will be more line of sight then to the quantum of the packages, which is everything from local government debt to leveraging, bank recapitalisation and housing destocking. So to answer whether there's been enough done, I think the prospects for a sustained recovery in China are improving, with the housing stabilisation looking like having more odds of coming to fruition. That should help consumer sentiment, consumption, which has been a massive drag on the economy, and that local government deleveraging are really the two structural issues that needed to be addressed. So it is looking realistic now that China will hit its close to circa 5% growth target for this year and probably about 4 or 4.5 next year.
Okay, so that's China. Let's talk about global interest rates, predominantly the US. We're waiting for inflation figures here in Australia at the end of the month, but we saw some data out of the US recently. What does that all say for the next rate decision?
Yeah, so we know we had the much anticipated beginning of the easing cycle in the US in September with that jumbo higher than expected 50 basis point cut. The Fed at the time basically said there was a recalibration of borrowing costs after a year of inflation coming towards target. Some softening in the labour market. So CPI, as you alluded to, was a bit stronger than expected, and that was released for September last week. Core CPI year on year was 3.3%, but we did get that producer price data basically unchanged on Friday. So all indications and traders are indicating now that 25 basis points of cuts will be is being priced in for both November and December. We also did see last week that the minutes of the Federal Open Market Committee meeting was released, and there were a number of committee members that were a little bit more dovish in September and actually did want a 25 basis point cut. So we don't think the data has been strong enough to justify a hold, and that's despite seeing things like a very strong non-farm payrolls report recently, where we had about 250,000 jobs added. So we think there will be a 25 basis point cut in both November and December, and the ECB is likely to cut by 25 basis points this week as well.
I guess the other major international factor are those geopolitical concerns, predominantly out of the Middle East, acknowledging the humanitarian impacts, though. Worried are you about it from an investment perspective? What are analysts saying about its implications for markets?
Yeah, so I guess the uncertainty remains quite high now. We've seen the fighting, as you said, intensify into Lebanon, South Lebanon, southern Beirut, and the Bekaa Valley along the border of Syria. I guess the key thing from a market or an analyst perspective, as you've asked, is unless there's a major disruption to oil supplies, from an investment perspective, I guess it remains another just horrible, awful war and humanitarian crisis. It's been more than a week now since Iran fired about 200 odd ballistic missiles at Israel, and the anticipation is if and how Israel or Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu decides to retaliate, and whether that does transpire into a greater escalation or regional war. I believe the security cabinet in Israel met over recent days, but there wasn't any concrete decision as to what any retaliation or timing of that would look like. I'm not sure if that was due to different views or just buying time. We know the US President Joe Biden certainly wouldn't want Iran to be hitting nuclear facilities or oil facilities now leading up to the US president election on the 5th of November. The other development we have seen, which is quite an interesting one, is that we did see Iran's foreign minister embark on a tour last week. He met with Saudi's Crown Prince MBS and also visited Qatar, which has been a big mediator between Israel, Hamas, Egypt in more recent times. And I guess, interestingly, we've seen perhaps one of the unintended consequences of the conflict, that there is a bit of a deepening of the relationship between Saudi and Iran, who have been long-time enemies because of the conflict, albeit there is still a lot of mutual distrust there. In terms of the market impact so far, oil prices are about 10% up from their pre-Iran attack levels. That's not enough now to signal have any major dent on global growth or inflation. But I guess from here, we need to see, does Israel retaliate or do they take some time? If that was the case, you'd probably see the energy price trickle back down to the pre-Iran attack levels. If Israel was to hit Iranian oil production, you could see oil prices spike, whether that's $10 or $20 a barrel, it's hard to say. It would take about 2 million barrels of Iran's exports off the market. But there are countries like Saudi and others in OPEC that could increase supply that would probably level that out. But I guess the key risk, which is really keeping investors on edge in some parts of the world, is if there was a retaliation against that and Iran did something drastic like close the Strait of Hormuz, where about 20 or 25% of global liquid fuel supply is transported through. So that could see energy prices go up to kind of post-Iranian, not Iranian, Ukrainian, Russian levels of about $120, $30 a barrel. But it seems unlikely at this stage that that would happen.
That's Nick Schoenmaker there from Drummond Capital Partners.
This SBS On The Money stream is provided for informational purposes only. The content in this stream should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and it does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision. This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. The content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.